Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast and upcoming documentary, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Preacher Boys podcast. I'm so excited to have Corey McDonald on the show with us. Corey, just really quick, can you give a brief introduction of yourself and what you've been working on to our audience?
Yeah, it's so nice to be here. Thanks, Eric. And I'm so grateful to have this time together. I describe myself as a creative healer. And that's basically weaving together the training that I have as a studio art therapist with a transpersonal approach. So that's body, mind, spirit, but believing in some higher force, whatever we're going to call it. And then I also have a couple other modalities that are predominantly nonverbal. So energy healing, heart speaking. And in essence, I think it's best described as one workshop attendee said, Corey, it's like yoga with crayons. So it's basically showing you how everyone is ultimately creative. So often we pick up this story, I did, that there's someone else that's creative in the family or in the classroom, or we have a teacher tell us, oh my God, you can't paint the sky pink. Usually there's some experience in our life where we shut down that playful childlike self, but actually that's where true power resides. So I love to open people up to the power of play using childlike materials, and then to leverage life's ultimate art material, which is heavy, hued stuff, challenges, yuck, that we think are broken and discarded, but like an upcycling artist who takes things that are like in the trash and can make something beautiful with them. Actually, we can do the exact same things with our life. So that's what I do in a nutshell, Eric.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. And I was telling you before recording, like one of the things with this show, I deal with a lot of people who've survived, you know, traumas and things like that. And, you know, sometimes, you know, sitting in an office with someone can seem pretty intimidating, you know, going to therapy, you know, in a traditional sense where someone's, you know, you're laying on a couch, someone's writing something in a notepad can be kind of a traumatizing thought. And so I'm really fascinated talking to people who do different forms of therapy, whether it's, you know, I mentioned like therapy where you go to like horse ranches and you work with horses, you've got, you know, art therapy, you've got all these different forms of really healing for people. And I just think it's super fascinating. So I want to go back before we dive into how you got started doing this as a form of therapy. When's kind of the first time you noticed that you had this kind of creative spark? Because I know everybody's got creativity as a kid. I mean, everyone, you know, pretends they play outside. They make believe all the time. But, you know, I know there's definitely too some personalities that lean way into that direction. That, you know, probably like yourself or like myself, where you've got that creative spark early on. What was that for you?
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good question. I mean, and that's it. that there are some of us as children that really go out there, and it tends to be because we're in family units where we're needing to create other worlds. Mm-hmm. I call it worlds within worlds. I grew up in a family with enough of a level of dysfunction that literally propelled me outside. And I actually remember one of my favorite things to do was to literally create, I mean, being up in northern or north-ish Canada, we had a lot of snow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why kids don't feel the cold. I didn't feel the cold. Yeah. I was so motivated as soon as I could get outside, and I would dig under trees and create my own homes, you know, my right. own worlds. And that's really interesting to me, because then, like, you just kind of follow that over into my university years. I ended into art school, and guess what, if you don't heal those things, you just take them along with you. Yeah. I remember my prof going, look at you, you tuck yourself way into the corner, and I was building with wood, literally, like forts, sculpting and building worlds, and but I found that in that solitude, though, so with everything there's a light to it, even if it looks heavy. Mm-hmm. If you flip it the other way, I was highly able to tap into this deep knowing inside of me that would just know where to place things. Or I didn't have book smarts as an artist, but I remember profs going, God, you just suddenly vanish, and then when you reappear, you've done these brilliant moves. And I think, what have I done? Like, I just loved it. Yeah. So it was interesting to me that I think you're right. From a very young age, and I would just tuck into the closet sometimes because I knew I could draw on the walls there and not be caught. So yeah. I was already using art therapeutically to calm me in a very chaotic household, and to find little places of safety. Right. And I love what you spoke of. So true. This is why I gravitated towards studio art therapy, the idea of it being very clinical and you're being watched, and you know, it's, that doesn't work. We need to feel safe, and we need to feel that we're walking alongside with whoever is giving us the support, that they've gone through it too, and that they're able to say, listen, I've been there, I can feel what you're feeling, and let's go, you know. Right. That's a very different process and a very different journey.
Right. Yeah. It's something that kind of happens naturally. And like, I was that way too. I mean, I had really supportive parents when it came to, you know, like, they were always making sure, you know, I had materials to draw, and like, that's what I did. Like I was always drawing. That kind of transitioned my friend, growing up, that I spent every day at his house. So like, we grew up pretty much like brothers. Like we would get to use his dad wasn't a videographer, but he always bought the new cameras. He was so interested in the technology of them. So we would always get the last camera that he had bought after he got a new one. So we were like 6 or 7, and like our playing was making, you know, movies in his backyard with VHS cameras. Like, so that was that was our kind of play, you know, like reenacting, you know, Indiana Jones and all these different things. And
yeah.
And so that carried over into, you know, into high school, that carried in, and yeah, it's that same thing. It stopped being paint and, you know, markers for me. And it ended up being like, you know, going off and editing something, or going off and shooting something. And so I definitely relate with that. And even now to this day, you know, I do that professionally now quite a bit. And,
podcasting, right?
Like, and podcasting. Yeah. It's a very therapeutic way to kind of creatively engage with the problems, you know, especially with the podcast, the conversations are so heavy so often, and they're incredibly, they can be incredibly taxing, but then also because I'm going at it from the angle that I feel comfortable in through a creative lens, it makes it a lot easier. I told somebody, I said, if I heard the stories I hear on this show in a coffee shop, I'd be weeping. Like I get so emotional in conversation, but with this, it's like, this is kind of my safety net. You know, I've got my microphone, I've got my cords here. I'm like, I'm good to go. Let's do it.
That's right. Oh, beautifully put, Eric. I mean, that's back to that safe space. Like, if we're feeling safe, and you've cultivated that, and even just your sensing that, okay, this would be someone that would be good to have conversation with. This could, because you're then taking it, you're upcycling it. You're taking right. something that's just, oh, heavy. But because that conversation is coming from a place that's different than where it was formed already. Right. And then you bring meaning to it and help to make meaning mm-hmm. of this stuff. Because, you know, that's a process too. You know, like some stuff you can flip pretty quick. But some stuff takes years. Yeah.
I love that phrasing to it, like bringing meaning to it. Because I think when you're a kid, I mean, your entire childhood, you have to kind of understand in hindsight. You experience it as a child and then you understand it as an adult. Some people never get to a chance where they are able to dig deep enough to understand it. I think they just look back on it broadly. But when was the first time that you kind of recognized, okay, I'm doing this and it's helping me in this way? Like, when's the time you started applying those labels of like, this is really therapeutic, like this is really, you know, healing for me? Because I know for me, it took a long time. Like, I knew I didn't feel good when I wasn't being creative, but I didn't know, like, I never made the correlation until much, much later on.
Oh my gosh, isn't that true? Hindsight's so wonderful, but damn, it takes a while.
Yeah, it sure does.
But I was just thinking about that because I was reflecting on when I started to be able to do that, like reflecting, but we're looking back. And a big piece that helped me in my journey that I never would have predicted was that we got married young, James and I, being in the church. And then we just had this really strong knowing to go and to leave Canada, and not just on the trip. We just, something in us was like, we want to go and live somewhere. And if I'm really honest now, at the time, I just was all for it. I just couldn't leave fast enough. I was literally, it's fight or flight, right? I was running from the things that I didn't want to look at or reflect upon yet. But that distance moving to Japan was so helpful because I started to see patterns that the stuff that I didn't deal with, like back there, it just moves with, you just take yourself. So Corey just created anything that I had an open gaping wound or even a little scratching itch with, it would kind of reform in, maybe it would be a Japanese neighbor or it would be a boss or a friend who, you know, would suddenly be reminding me of, oh, this is a dynamic I have with my sister that I didn't mend, you know? So that was when I started to really look at things, but I didn't really look, like I was very much in, this stuff is happening to me. Like I wasn't taking any ownership of it. It was more, God, why does this stuff always happen to me? But even in that's, I believe that whatever we're going to call this higher power, force, universe, God, you know, great spirit, whatever, life, I call it life, will say, you know what, you're going to have to ride, you're going to have to 4x4 a little bit. And I bumped for a while, right? And then you were talking about your three-year-old. Then it was when we had the three kids in Japan that I started to really bottom out. And things got hard then because that's when it's like, oh, I'm doing the exact same things to them as I ran away from. You can't run away from it in your own kids, you know? So that's when I was like, I need support. Like I need help. And that was it. That was such a gift, you know, that painful. It's not, it doesn't feel good at the time, but it was the best thing. Cause then everything could start to take a different trajectory for me.
Kids change a lot of perspective, and it kind of instantly makes you very aware of your weaknesses and your strengths at the same time. So and a lot of it too, like you see so much of your personality even early on. Like I see so much of myself in my daughter, and I see so much of my wife in my daughter. And you know, sometimes that manifests in very good ways, and then sometimes you're like, oh no, that's exactly how I am, or that's how I deal with things. But yeah, I know you alluded to kind of your church experience. And I know it seems like you went to a couple different churches, but you dipped your toes into the Baptist world a little bit, which is something I didn't know when I booked this. I booked you just to talk through more of what we're talking about, but it's just funny how there's those shared connections. So can you just talk a little bit about kind of your
experience within church and, you know, maybe what was helpful, what was unhelpful, and what led you to kind of end up leaving?
Oh, I love that question. And it's so, I was just sharing with you that I wrote a little chunk of that in my book. And now interesting, as I talk about propelling to Japan, it was really on the heels of that pain that I received in, and it was the last one I church shopped at was a Baptist church. And I think what happened is, like, when I talk about my early childhood years, it was a lot of dysfunction, but the reason was because my parents grew up with immigrant parents. They were in survival mode. They didn't have tools. So they, now as I've gotten older, I'm very close to my parents now, and they've done so much healing in themselves, which is amazing for their generation. And, but as I hear the stories of what they walked through, oh my gosh, no wonder they had no tools to raise four girls. So anyhow, then when that happened, that we started to grow up, and my mom right away knew, oh my gosh, we need some sort of structure here, because dad's out. He's self-medicating with beer. That was the version, whatever he needed. And mom was like running this house and losing it. So she just went, okay, the best thing I can see what all the neighbors are doing, they're going to church. And that's when we started. So I think I was about 10. And so was old enough I was wanting some structure too, you know. But what I now know about energy is wherever you're at, wherever vibration you're at, because ultimately if you take us down to the smallest thing, we're just vibrating quarks. And so what did we do? We dovetailed right to, interesting, a family of four daughters, mom and at that time dad's not coming. We went to a church that literally took the verse, women cover your heads and be silent, literally. And so there we were. So it was already, church was a confusing sort of place. Yet there were beautiful things that were lacking. Things like the feeling of a family, or going to summer camp where you could have just good fun and sing songs and all those things that were missing in our home, you know? So all of that happened. And then as we got older, we all went on our own journeys, figuring out what is religion, what is spirituality, what sits right with us, what doesn't. And as I was on mine, I was coming into, it was during the university years. I just always knew that there was something way more beyond this. I just knew, I could feel like life pulsing in me. And maybe it's that creative flow. When you're in that flow, you're not doing it. There's something creating all these things that come out of you. And so I had that knowing. And I remember going to a church, and it happened to be a Baptist church. And I was so excited, because also falling in love at that time. And my husband now, he was at that church, and he said, Cor, you will love the worship, because the singing, and they feel when they sing, and he knew that's important to me. So we get going, and right away, both of us had a passion to work with. I love to work with kids who were like awkward, 15, 14, because I remember being so awkward then, and I had a heart for that. And so we volunteered. He was already volunteering, and I volunteered, but I had right away, again, this intuitive knowing that something was off. And back to safe space, as I started to work there, the young girls started to come near me a lot and started to tell me that they didn't feel safe with the pastor who was overseeing. And that was really challenging, Eric, because I was 21, and I was, though I had church shopped, there was a common thing that was really fed to me and to all of us, was that this person in authority is an authority, you know. And back to that nervousness of going into an office, that was definitely, and being raised in a family where my father was a really aggressive authority at that in my formative years. So that was definitely a soul lesson for me. It got to the point where I had to confront him.
Sorry. So yeah. As far as the people coming to you feeling uncomfortable, was it something where there was abuse actually happening at the church, or was it just a general sense of like, we don't feel like we've got any kind of power here, like we're kind of defenseless in this environment?
That's a great question. And it was the beginnings of inappropriate connect, first asking girls to come out and meet him and outside of the church, and just right away it was red flags, you know. And it was just the beginnings of it because he was new, but right away something rose in me like a protective mama. And I just rose. And that was interesting to me because I didn't see that strength in me before. And I just started asking people questions. But I learned quickly that so many of us, maybe because I came in a little bit late to it, I was stunned how many people just gave away their power outwardly.
Mm.
And even mothers who said, yeah, Corey, we get a bad vibe too. And, you know, our daughters mentioned something, and I'd say, okay, let's do something. So it was challenging, and it ended really badly because I took time and I faced him. And what he did, of course, was just to gaslight me, ended up kind of being, everyone turned their back and I was out of the church suddenly. Mm. And I thought, wow, like, what was that? But over in Japan, I really unpacked it, and I could definitely, that was one of the first things I had to leverage, something really heavy for the light. And I saw, I threw everything out, like the whole thing out, even the idea of this higher power out for a while. And I lived for a while in a really dark place.
Mm.
And it took me like to a low that I never hit before. And then I realized after that, I actually got stuck in that earthquake in Japan. Mm. And it was in that darkness underneath the ground that I felt that force again in me. I should have been terrified. Everything was shaking and dark, and I felt absolute love inside of me. And I thought, that's it. So there is a difference here. There is something bigger than all this. Mm. And that is whatever you're going to, for me, I call it a spiritual knowing. And that's a very different thing than an organized religious knowing. And I'm not to say that all organized religion is off, because there's some beautiful things up there. But for my personal journey, I saw that it took away from that inner knowing to outsource everything, to give one power or a handful of people power and say they can do anything, because we can't. We have to all listen to that guidance within and do the thing that we are here to do. And that never brings us into discord. That never brings us into hurting one another. And that much I knew. So from that really awful journey came this fierce knowing that when I sit with someone, I don't care if they're in the most rage place. I've been there. And it's okay, because I know that when you hit someplace like that, when you turn that over, you have such a height that you're going. But when you can really connect with those and feel and have deep empathy and compassion when you've walked that road and heal from it. So,
no,
yeah,
no, it's interesting. So like we talked earlier about like suppressing the creative side, you know, and a lot of people as they get older, you know, it's that, I mean, that's what Peter Pan's about, you know, right? You suppress that creative side, but also too, I think a lot of people are on the flip side of that. And I resonate with your story of, you know, I think sometimes you as a creative can be, you know, I'm the awkward girl with the, you know, that's coloring in the corner, or I'm the guy. Like for me, I was the, you know, I joke with people sometimes, like I went to a private Christian school, like, you know, 40 kids in high school. And I'm like, yeah. I was the nerdy kid out of the nerdy kids. Like I was like the next the level nerd. Down. Right. And, you know, and so, you know, but for what I resonate with is like, while a lot of people suppress the creative side, I was full blown into the creative side, but I suppressed, you know, I never thought of myself as being, and I'm still not, I still don't think this is who I am. I'm not confrontational. You know, I'm very much a people pleaser. I'm very much, you know, quiet and, you know, I don't, my wife always says like, yeah, my wife says like, you're too nice. Like, you know, don't let someone run you over. And it's true. Like I've been in a lot of situations where that's happened, but what's amazing is I think that sometimes creatives tend to suppress that engagement, like public side and,
you know, for me, it was the same thing. The first time I ever got vocal and, you know, I guess aggressive about anything was in a similar situation. It was someone had come to our church who at his previous church had been, he was 30, 15-year-old babysitter. I mean, it was a bad situation.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's this voice that was never there. Like I was never, I talked to my dad about it. I'm like, we never went through that stage where as a teenager, I was like, you know, I hate you. I'm going to my room and slam the door. Yeah. Like it never happened, but it was in those moments I became extremely like vocal and I started really sharing that side of me. And that's something that's strange, like sitting here doing this podcast, like I never would have thought that I would be in a situation where I'd be speaking out on something. Yeah. Like it was always internalizing it. And then I create something that kind of, you know, it just made me feel better. Like I'll go shoot this pretty sunset or I'll go shoot someone, you know, doing this. But now it's like, it's kind of motivated me. Seeing something happen that shouldn't be happening kind of pushed me out into that and into that kind of direction. And that's really, it's just really interesting what we are capable of if pushed in the right direction. And
isn't it true? I love what you say, Eric. And yet you see all those beautiful building blocks that you trust your creativity, you trust your expression. I call it the creative intelligence within us. Suddenly you trust that, right? Like you suddenly have this knowing that is with a capital N and you're like, no, I can say this. And it just flows out. And now look at it's in words now, but I think it's like learning a language. I notice whenever we go to a country and I have to learn the language like Japanese or something, I start with listening to it on the TV or just really noticing when I'm in a taxi and trying to pick things that I've seen in a book. But it takes like a good year before I'm like actually having it flow out of me. And then once it starts, it builds quickly.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of what we were saying is like when your creative intelligence is going, it's like extra feeler. So I think that's why we're sensitive to these. Interestingly, that was the situation with this guy. And my cousin, who's a court reporter, like I had long forgot him. And this is a few years later in Japan, she said, oh, Corey, I was in court today. And apparently he was causing trouble with the babysitter, but they've got him locked up. I said, when you mentioned that, I thought, isn't this funny, these patternings? Yeah. But see, our knowing knew that something's off. Like right away, I just could feel it, you know, and you knew, and we weren't people who would usually express, but I think it's also building that in us because we do now. We do speak up to him. Yeah.
And hey, everybody, we're going to get back to the show in just a minute. But before our brief intermission, I'd like to introduce a thought-provoking new podcast called Psychotherapy. That's two words if you're going to go search for it right now. This show sheds light on the very real issue of abusive therapists and pastoral counselors. In every helping profession, including therapy, there's a vulnerability to exploitation. And Psychotherapy delves deep into the red flags, risks, and real-life stories of those affected by unethical practices. Tune in to Psychotherapy with Leah Denton on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your shows.
I'm Leah Denton, and this is Psychotherapy, a show dedicated to providing survivors of therapy harm a platform to share their stories and to offer language for those of us trying to make sense of our own experiences with the psycho in the therapist chair.
Yeah, you mentioned creative intelligence. It's something, it's different for the same thing, but I over the last year, you know, I've talked a lot because I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and you know, in my own business and things, that's what I do. I work with people in business advertising and things like that. And so, you know, one thing I always talk about with people is like, you have your IQ, but then you have your EQ. So you've got your emotional intelligence. Yeah. And so many people shut that side off, I feel like. And I think creatives, it comes easier because we're always thinking emotionally. Like that's how the way that I process is not spreadsheets. Like I don't, that's a no for me. But when it comes to addressing situations, it's very much emotional. And that's, I think what we get programmed by society to think is that emotionally processing situations is a weaker form of processing. Like I think we tend to say that, you know, if you put things in boxes and can sit there and lay it out and then deal with it. But a lot of times what I notice is
people who have the intel, and both are needed, like people who focus more on the IQ, you know, they sit and they structure and organize. That's phenomenal. Like that helps them to identify certain patterns and things like that. But also too, I think we shouldn't discount people who have the emotional intelligence, because I can sit in a room, you know, and I've said this for a long time. My wife actually, like, she thinks it's funny because I've called a lot of things with, I'll meet somebody and I'll talk to them. And within 5 minutes, I have in my mind, like, I know exactly how they are and who they are. And, you know, there's been things where like, there's literally situations where I've said, like, I know that we can't trust this person. Like, I just know. And, you know, 3-4 months later, it's like, wow, it's like that, it was huge. But, and again, sometimes you can get into trouble. If you leave either of those unchecked, you can get yourself into trouble. But I think you have to be able to be in tune with, like, what's my gut telling me? What's the perception of the situation? And I think that's huge. Even like I said, doing these conversations or doing therapy, you have to be able to pick up on those little signs that people give off that tell you where to take this conversation or this relationship moving forward.
Oh my gosh. It's so important what you're speaking of, because, oh, and it's something I think the only time that I'm doing anyone justice, like whether we're chatting in this conversation or I'm doing a workshop or I wrote a whole chunk of this in the book, because the person who helped me to understand it really beautifully with words is when I learned heart speaking, which is taking stuff that feels stuck in her heart. It was a body worker. She was a not a physiotherapist, Dr. Ann Jensen. She's a chiropractor. And when she was practicing, now she's neuroscience and she's doing all sorts of things and talking about this very thing, because so many people would be, she'd be working on their bodies and they'd be chatting out of their thinking mind. So she called it, this is the thinking mind, that beta mind that's just going and humming. And you're right. It's logical. It tells time. It remembers dates. You can order things. And it's what predominantly the whole bloody world is operating in all the time.
Right.
It's the very thing that gets jacked up and hijacks us. Like for me, if I get my grocery list going and my other list, my list's like, I'm a list like, but it is useful and there's a time and place for it. But she said it was really noticing that when she was working on these people, she, like us, could feel stuff very much from her. She calls it the feeling mind, which is in your center. And it is in your whole beingness. So it's the one that is messy, it's chaotic, it's childlike, it's imaginal, but it's not predictable. So it's like seen as childish, but that's a very different thing between childish and childlike, right? We're talking about not childish having a tantrum. It's childlike having curiosity and wonder, like what if, or why don't we try this? So she would really see that, oh my gosh, when there's such a disconnect, they've literally, and that's tends to be trauma, right? We don't want to be in trauma. The body holds a score and we just shut down. So this is overworked. And so I really love what you're speaking to. And I really believe that every time that for James and I too, every time we followed an intuitive hit and said, you don't know why we're going to move to Dubai. I never thought I'd live in Dubai. And we got to go and we go and then something opens up where there's no look, like you said, that looking back, that reflecting, you know, when we look back, we can see, oh, wow, we had to go for X, Y, and Z. But just that beautiful poet MC Richard says, not knowing and trusting simultaneously, that is the heart, right? And we can do such amazing things and avoid pitfalls, like you did when you were like, don't trust that guy. Yeah. That's wisdom to me. That's real wisdom. And heart math, I love working with heart math. And they've measured the magnetical field of our thinking mind and of our feeling mind. And this one is 5,000 times stronger field than this. So can you imagine when you sync these up and have full coherence, then you're humming, you know, you can get all that stuff, you know, organized with this knowing of what to attend to and what to leave and who to dovetail with and who not to. And it just works out so smooth that way.
I mean, I, so obviously you know, personally feeling this is one thing, you know, kind of, I guess you could say teaching it or showing someone is another thing. And so I'd love to dive into when did you start feeling like, okay, I feel like this is really helping me. I want to start helping other people through this journey. What kind of sparked that? Like, where you're like, I want to start showing the power of this to other people.
Oh, I love this. So where was that first thread? Well, so my feeling mind took me right back to Japan. Mm-hmm. And it was after I got out of that earthquake tunnel situation. I felt that force. And I said, I guess it's a prayer. I started to pray again, or a promise that I said, if I get out of this and find the kids and James, and I will go. And I just had this said, I will go and take art to the survivors. I'll do art therapy with the survivors. I wasn't trained. I had just in art school, I just noticed, Eric, that like I didn't give a rip to talk about like if this has got a good, like, you know, tension with that. Yeah. I could talk that way to appease my profs, but you know, the only thing I would do is when I'd see someone throw up a body of work, my whole sensing would just be like, wow. I'd say like, Zoe, I can totally see you're coming up out of your anger with your, through your divorce. Like I could just see stuff, you know, in the art. And my prof was like, oh my gosh, Corey, you've got to go study art therapy. But I just kind of put it aside for, okay, maybe one day. But then bit by bit, Eric, I would take little steps. Like I do my psych masters, or I did, you know, I take a course here and there. But we kept moving or having babies. And I just thought one day. And then when I got out of that train and I started running home, I remember every step of the way, I started to literally see me loading up the truck. And maybe coming from like US, Canada, big landmass, I kept, for me, like 5 hours up the road, 6 hours up the road, because we were in Yokohama, it was worse up north. But I thought, that for me, that's just up the road. Like we drive that far to go skiing.
Right.
So, you know, I had to go help. And that's when I went, didn't even speak, barely spoke Japanese at the time. Didn't have official training. All I knew is intuitively take a tarp, take water and wipes, because I knew they had nothing to, I know Japanese law, all my Japanese friends said, oh my God, how about there's no cleaning, like they're very clean and there's nothing. So I took basic necessities with this group that I went with, and then I took supplies, art supplies, very simple. And it just by chance, people were donating things from preschool, which in the end is still what I use, because that's safe.
Yeah.
If you're bringing up, you know, simple crayons and origami paper and all of a sudden I saw, wow, this is all they need right now, because they are loaded with traumatic stories. They're loaded with heaviness and there's nowhere to put all that. And so it was beautiful just to give that as an offering, really, because I could hold stories. I could listen, but with some, there was, you know, between my bad, poor Japanese and the broken English, some spoke beautiful English, but it was that after that, I knew the power of art, because not only could they tell me what happened and show me more than words, move that energy out. It's a very physical thing. When you're running around with your video camera or when you're folding origami, it's your body is moving energy and emotion. Emotion is energy in motion.
Right.
So all they got to do is put it out. And and then also what was so gorgeous, and I never even thought about it till we left. And when I came back, I went up a few times, is seeing this beat up old gymnasium that had been cleaned out. We dug out mud and tried to make a home as a shelter, to see it start to fill with colors, like origami creatures and pictures of hope, you know, and to start seeing that build. So you build things too, right? With the thing, things start to transform in the space around. So that taught me, wow, this is the power of nonverbal therapy. You know, that this stuff, when stuff is so heavy, you don't have words, and it's not, you just have to move it, and you have to move. And so I really was drawn to that. And that for me personally, working through my depressions and my anxiety and my pain of my past, it worked so powerful for me too. So I only share what works for me. I still right. use stuff at right. least on a weekly basis because stuff happens, you know,
yeah.
got to process it. Yeah,
no, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it raises a question. So people are obviously looking for, you know, alternative forms of therapy. That was, you know, one of the main reasons yeah. I wanted to bring you on, is just to open people's minds to the opportunity to do something as opposed to, you know, what we think of, which is just sitting in a room and talking through it analytically. Yeah. But for people who are listening, who are like, yeah, that sounds great, but I'm not creative, or I don't have, or maybe even yeah. deeper, they say, you know, I don't have the skills to, you know, I can't draw yeah. a stick figure. You know, they're sitting there going like, I just am not good at it. Would it still be helpful for someone like that to try it out, to try yeah. to work through it, even if they don't have kind of the know-how of how to, you know, paint or how to,
yeah,
you
know, or even create draw.
In some way, right? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's the biggest, I would think that's the biggest barrier to trying this for everybody, you know, because it's back to that idea that what is art? So with art therapy, it's back to when I said it's emotion. We're just moving stuff out of us. So it's energy in motion. And so think of, even thinking of the preschool art supplies, I do say to people, just, I'm going to use a magic wand. I take an old pencil and I said, this is a magic wand. And right. you are now, whoop, you're a little kid in preschool.
Yeah.
This is the sort of art we're doing, you know, and it's really just mark making and doodling. And then, you know, what's interesting though, is you can take anything and put it out on a paper, you know, for example. Oh, why don't I show you? I literally have crayons right beside. I love it. I'm almost 50, but I've always got my crayon. So like, for example, let's say you came to me and said, Corey, honestly, I've had this crazy like pain in my neck for the past 5 weeks. And I feel like there's something under there. I might just say, okay, let's feel it. Let's show it. So the first thing we do is close our eyes and we go with the pain because the pain is full of information. So with a transpersonal approach, we use things like closing our eyes, going into our body, or meditation or breathing techniques. So we're really centering in and getting to that feeling mind out of this one. And then you might pick up, and then what I say is be like a kid in a candy store. So here's all my colors. It looks like candies, right? When you're a kid in a candy store and grandpa says, I'll take you, don't tell your mother. You don't analyze which one you're going to take. You just pick up and go, okay, I'll grab this one. So I grabbed orange. Maybe the pain is sharp, you know, like it might come out sharp, or maybe it's something like this. Sometimes people will say, I don't know. It's just I don't know what's bugging me. And I'll say, show me. And I had a woman just go like this, like a gray haze. You know what I mean? Sometimes people they're just run up their feet. They're like, all of a sudden the paper is like, it's all over the place. The hand will start to go. And then when you're bored, you just drop it and you're going to grab another. And then you get in a flow and all of a sudden you have all this data here. And then what do we do with that? We don't get into talking about it. There is some art therapy where you can go straight to analytical, but no, we stay in play and we just look at it. We meet it outside of ourselves. It's like us, the highest creative intelligence right here, looking like disguised as preschool art. And then we can say, hey, where is my eye really pulled to? Oh, my eye's there. Okay, just like on our phone, we zoom in on a picture. Let's go in our imagination. I wonder if we imagine zooming into that gray, what would be there? Imagine them to another paper. And we can go in. Worlds within worlds, and we can find information. And then as people are creating, or sometimes it happens in the conversation after, we feel into a guide to how to feel into the painting or drawing. Information always comes. And sometimes it comes like in a dream that night, or you're walking down the street and you're just, oh my God, that's what this is about. You know, we're stirring up a pot that seems scary. And it is when you don't have the tools and you don't have a warm circle of support to guide you into that pod. But when you have someone who's not afraid and can show you, you don't have to be afraid. There's a wealth of information in there. That's how we go in. And the body is so wise, and the creative intelligence joins up, and that syncs up with that thinking mind, takes the back seat, because this stuff starts to inform what is it going on and what do you need really well for yourself now? And that's how we go bit by bit by bit. Does that give you a little sense of how it works, Eric?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredible. And it speaks to the fact that I think sometimes the scariest stuff is the stuff we don't know how to identify. So like you mentioned, you know, you can be thinking, oh, I feel this haze, or I feel this sharp pain, or, you know, when I think about this, but until you can identify it, you can't address it. And so there's so much where you know, I've had those moments just this year, like through the show, like, I feel guilty because sometimes I bring on people and I'm like, man, I feel like this was for me. You know, I brought on a trauma therapist, and, you know, afterward I talked for about 20 minutes or so, probably an hour. Honestly, I probably kept her for way too long, but I just kept asking questions, and there were things that she said, one sentence just that hit personally to mm-hmm. identifying something that was bothering me. And, you know, immediately in that moment that you feel your eyes well up, you're like, oh, that was what, you know, that's what for, you know, 15 years or 10 years or 20 years or my entire life has been this source of pain that I never identified. But it's like I love scary, like I love horror movies. That's one of my other therapy outlets, but it's this funny thing about horror movies is that the scariest that a monster is in a horror movie or a killer in a movie is when you see them in a shadow, or you see, yes. you know, you get a hint, or the music kicks in. But usually, especially with older movies, once you see the monster in pure daylight, it's not scary anymore. You yeah. know, it's this thing of it doesn't bother me. And there's so much like that just in my own life, where things that I felt so scared to even talk about, or felt like I don't want to go down that, you know, we all have that. I don't even go down that way. I don't want to start.
We all have this. Yes.
And the truth is, like, you know, there've been things, there was something that was huge for me, and it was the end of 2018. Like I told my wife, I was like crying. I told her, and then now it's like, I can talk about it. It's fine. It's done, you know? And I thought for years, like, I can never talk about this. I can never say what I feel about this. But yeah, it's so important to be able to identify it. And I think what you do is incredible in helping people do that, especially people who are so blocked off to even going down that road. So,
yeah, I really, and I love that you speak to that, because it's true. That is exactly it. It's those things that we don't even know how to speak to, or we just see it. Maybe we're triggered by something, or, you know, that we have a hint, and that is actually the scariest to us. But that's actually, like you said, once you put it in the light, it's so liberating. And then you're right. You start to be able to talk about it, and you start to be a guide to others who are ready to peek underneath that bed, that monster.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think what you do is absolutely incredible. And I've really appreciated this conversation. I honestly didn't know like what to expect going into it. And I knew, you know, I felt like I didn't know this world at all, but you know, just hearing you explain it, I'm like, man, it's kind of what I feel like I've been doing this for, but no, I really appreciate what you're doing. And just before we close, I know you just wrote a book. It came out this month, called Life in Full Colors. Can you just give a quick kind of descriptor or kind of preview of what people can expect from that book and where people can find it?
Definitely. And I'm so excited to share this book, because it is filled with stories and with creative processes. It's based on this. I noticed, whether I was working in the slums in Bangkok with kids or with CEOs in beautiful glass buildings in Dubai, there was just 7 transformative tools that would leverage whatever heaviness was a heaviness, but there was a little hiccup or one of those big monsters under the bed, and we could leverage that as our ultimate art material. So the book is called Life in Full Colors, and my husband surprised me with a copy and it looks like this, and it's the subtitle is Unlock Your Childlike Curiosity to Uncover and Activate the Creative Intelligence You Are. And so in this book is, it shows you and it invites you to apply your own colors into it, and it guides you as though I'm right beside you. But it's not just my stories. It's so many people who have walked through and uncovered their creative intelligence, and people, like you said, who couldn't draw a stick man and thought, this is, what is this, you know? So that's an important thing to know, that you are a creator, and you are, we are in a creation. We all love nature. We get sparked by it because that is what we are. But there's so much that more to us that we can use in life. And I teach you the beta model in here with crayons, but as you get comfortable with these processes, you can start to process stuff in real time, energetically, with your imagination, and move heavy things out so that you don't get derailed, you don't lose time, and you don't lose your joy. And that's important now with lockdowns and isolation, when we can feel really like, ooh, heavy down with all the collective fear, with stuff that's going on in our world. It can really bring us down. So if we don't know how, sometimes it's not even our stuff. So if we don't know how to process the stuff even around us, and this is just simple power tools that you can learn to do this. So it's available on Amazon in Kindle or paperback version. And it's all net proceeds I'm donating to the Vancouver Island Counseling Center for immigrants and refugees, thinking of the trauma that they go through and with leaving like war-torn places, and then often re-traumatized when they come in and have anti-immigrant sentiment or what have you, and poverty, and coming from immigrant grandparents. My heart just goes off. So know that you'll be lifting yourself, but you'll be lifting others too with your purchase. So
amazing. Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming on. And I really encourage everyone, just go check out the book, Life in Full Colors. If you appreciate the conversation, which I don't know how you wouldn't with this conversation we just had, but really, really appreciate you coming on and wishing you the best wherever life takes you next.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. And keep podcasting and creating, and even teach your child to. She's got a film like you.
Absolutely. So okay. Awesome.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes, and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.